She looked about her and picked up her parasol. "Because you're not so afraid of anyone else in the world as you are of her."
"My husband, if I should marry, would be at the worst less of a terror?"
"If that's what you mean, there may be something in it. But doesn't it depend a little also on what you mean by my getting a proper one?" "However," Kate added as she picked out the frill of her little umbrella, "I don't suppose your idea of him is quite that he should persuade you to live with us."
"Dear, no, not a bit."
He spoke as not resenting either the fear or the hope she imputed, met both imputations, in fact, with a sort of intellectual relief.
"I place the case for you wholly in your aunt's hands. I take her view with my eyes shut. I accept in all confidence any man she selects. If he's good enough for her, elephantine snob as she is, he's good enough for me, and quite in spite of the fact that she'll be sure to select one who can be trusted to be nasty to me. My only interest is in your doing what she wants." "You shan't be so beastly poor, my darling," Mr. Croy declared, "if I can help it."
"Well, then, goodbye, Papa,"
the girl said after a reflection on this that had perceptibly ended for her in a renunciation of future debate. "Of course, you understand that it may be for long." Her companion had hereupon one of his finest inspirations.
"Why not, frankly, forever? You must do me the justice to see that I don't do things that I've never done them by halves. That if I offer you to efface myself, it's for the final fatal sponge I ask, well saturated and well applied."
She turned her handsome, quiet face upon him at such length that it might indeed have been for the last time.
"I don't know what you're like."
"No more do I, my dear. I've spent my life in trying in vain to discover. Like?"